session number 11214, reel 8.
Colonel Jourdain, reel 8. We were talking about the officers of the 1st Battalion who you had knowledge of. This is for researchers dealing with the events of the mutiny.
Yes.
You weren't at the mutiny.
No.
Just your knowledge of certain officers who were. What about Thomas Jennings?
I can see him. All I know about him is he was a first cousin of this chap Sarsfield. And it was so, therefore, he must have belonged to that family. It was probably a good Irish family. And whether he got into some sort of trouble or not, I don't know, but it doesn't matter. No, I won't dig it up.
What sort of trouble would it be?
Probably money or gambling or something of that sort, that type.
Was he a noted gambler?
I don't know. I mustn't go on with
right,
that because it's too vague.
Was there much gambling in the regiment?
No, I wouldn't say so.
What about Desmond McSweeney?
McQueeney. I think, terribly disappointed man over the mutiny in which he had took a major part in quelling, I think. And from what you say and one to others, I think he is still alive in Dublin, but we've never heard a squeak from him for years and years.
Why do you say he was disappointed? What gives you that impression?
Well, that the mutiny should have occurred. As we all were, of course, and he took an active part in dealing with it, more so, I think, than anybody else.
In what way? What did you hear he'd done?
Well, it was put down those bloody rifles or something like that, but there are various books about it, and I can't remember the details, because I'm not dodging that.
You didn't hear any special detail of his action?
No, but there are one or two books which probably trotted out. I'll see if I can find them,
It wasn't first-hand or second-hand?
No, because it was in India, you see, I was not in India.
No officer who was there had told you anything special about McQueeney?
That's a curious thing. I can never remember discussing the mutiny with anybody at all.
Why was that? Because it was your regiment.
I think it was more geography than anything else. You see, I'd gone off suddenly to North Russia. I had nothing to do with it. I mean, I suddenly got sent to North Russia and was not there when that happened. Then, of course, that was 1920, I think. The regiment was disbanded in 1922. And dispersed all over the place. And so lots of conversations that might have taken place did not take place.
What about Ignatius Joseph Kelly? I'm not quite sure what order that name's in.
Oh, it's probably one of these Roman Catholic Christian names that they like to have. I just remember his face, but I can't remember anything else.
Christopher Walsh?
Ditto, but I think he was a ranker. I'm not sure.
Nothing about him, no?
No, I don't.
Patrick Sarsfield, would that
he was, so to speak, a buddy of mine, in the sense that his father, as I told you, I think, was the second in command of the 1st Battalion, as well, the 2nd Battalion, in 1914 in France, and was the only senior officer in the whole lot who got killed. And my uncle determined that the son should not be killed, which is a rather difficult thing to bring about in the First War. And so the poor boy was never allowed to go to the front.
Did he resent that?
Oh, yes, I think so. I mean, who wouldn't? We knew each other pretty well. That's quite true.
What was he like?
He was a nice-looking, fair-haired boy. I don't know. I don't remember seeing a photograph of his father, whether he was like his father or not, I don't know. But he was a nice chap.
Was he a
well-educated?
What? Was he a good officer?
I honestly don't know, but one assumes that all officers were good unless they were bad. Rather like that. I mean, I think he went to Sandhurst and so forth. He was and he belonged to what was a good regimental family.
But it was very sad for him.
Well,
was he popular?
Oh, yes, I think so. But, of course, it was very unfortunate, I think, that he was kept from going to the front. Because any chap, obviously, at that age and that generation and so on, wanted to go to the front. Didn't want to get killed necessarily, but he didn't want to be compulsorily held, kept at home, which was the case.
What about Desmond Rowney?
Rooney.
Sorry, William Rooney, yes. Or William or Desmond.
I don't know, he always, somehow, it rings a bell like one of the chaps in Coronation Street. If that means anything to you, because I'm a Coronation Street addict.
You mean he was like someone in it? Or
yes, there's a chap in it. Immediately when you say that, I can imagine the two people coinciding, so to speak, with a little small black moustache.
Which one did he remind you of?
In Coronation Street? I can't remember what his name is now, but he's the husband of one of these girls. They keep on cropping up in every instalment, I mean, two or three chaps. And they're all employed round about the pub. I've forgotten the name of the pub now. But anyhow, that's by the way. It looked a bit like that. Yeah, there's nothing wrong in that. I'm a great admirer of the Coronation Street people.
What about Guy Barry?
Barry and... a tall, lanky sort of chap, and I can't remember much more.
Henry Hoseason?
Hoseason, I knew. He was rather like McPeak, you know, the chap who was the husband, this good lady, who's the husband has died a year or so ago. McPeak has been the regimental historian of the Connaught Rangers and has just died a year ago. And this chap was rather like him to look at.
Any other characters?
Small, dark... what's his name again? I've forgotten his name.
Hoseason,
yes.
Henry Sanford Hoseason.
One always thinks of a travel agency when one hears his name. But he was a nice, ordinary, run-of-the-mill subaltern like myself in the 1st Battalion after the war. I don't know where he was during the war or if he was in it.
Right, I think that... there are no other points you'd wish to make about the mutiny, are
there? No, because my knowledge is so second-hand. I mean, I'm quite well aware of that. And then,
right. Now, let's turn back to the circumstances of you actually getting this posting to North Russia. How did you... this was in August, I understand. How did you first get notice of that?
Well, it was all dramatic. A telegram came down which said, send FWSJ to the Tower of London. That's not meant to be funny, but I mean, it was so, you see. Report to the Arctic officer, the Tower of London. One had an idea that I'd been on intelligence course at Harrow on the Hill, where there is a school, that I might get an intelligence job sometime, somewhere. But this happened quite soon afterwards, and there was this dramatic telegram saying that, and I go to the Arctic officer in the Tower of London, and the chap there was... a man who had been at my prep school in Oxford, and I asked him what this was all about, and was he going to give me fur coats or whatever, but he didn't. He said, no, you go down to Tilbury and embark on the HMTH, or transport, I think, A or something or other, Kursk, K-U-R-S-K, which is an ex-Russian ship, of course, and I get down there, and there only appeared to be about half a dozen odds and ends, British officers and so on. There was a major who I think constituted the CO of the ship, the military CO of the ship. I was promptly appointed adjutant. And that was that.
Before you went, were you briefed at all about...
No. I had no idea. I'd been on this intelligence course, which was a vague thing in any case. And I had no idea what this is all about.
Did you know anything about the situation in North Russia?
No. I'd been thinking of India, of course, and so forth until then, 5 minutes before.
So you weren't aware of the political situation or of the war that was developing?
No, I had no idea about anything, really. I think there must have been half a dozen of us. We must have all been in that ship together, but I was made ship's adjutant, I know that. And we were all gloriously dressed with green tabs and green hatbands. We thought ourselves looking very beautiful.
What did the green indicate?
Intelligence officers. And we had green tabs. Unfortunately, I haven't got a photograph of myself, and that would be good for my brother-in-law, I'm sure. But we all went out there not knowing quite well that none of us spoke Russian, which wasn't very clever. And when we got there, we were distributed into various places, which is another story.
What happened? Do you remember anything about the voyage?
No, except we had a silly ass business of ship's edge, and I made
what
a fool.
Did that? Sorry, carry on.
Well, what time reveille was and what time meals would be served and things like that, or might have been commanding officer's inspection or something like that. And what was there? Was I did some awful thing. I told a naval gentleman who was wearing an ordinary sailor's kit with three stripes on his arm to take orders from another naval gentleman who was wearing a monkey jacket and a stiff collar and that kind of thing, thinking that the monkey jacket and stiff collar chap was senior to the other one. I'd made a proper boo because the chap with three stripes on his arm was a sergeant or the equivalent, and this fellow was a clerk. But the clerks were dressed in the Navy more or less like officers, and that made me very unpopular with the rest of the Navy, as were passengers on the ship. But that's all. I mean, it was a sort of comic opera, the whole thing. There's that little bit I wrote about it, which it's one of those things which probably describes it.
Where did you go then? What route? Where exactly were you?
Well, we went down to Tilbury or somewhere, due east for a little way, and then turned round and went due north for a long way until we were level with the North Cape or wherever it is, and then turned to the right, went along a little bit like that, and then turned to the right again. And at the point where we turned to the right again, trees were about that high. And you went down to Murmansk. I don't know how far it is, but the trees gradually got higher and higher. It was quite interesting seeing it from Murmansk itself. They were normal height. It's the effect of the Arctic Circle, I suppose. And then I don't quite know what happened when we got there, because nobody seemed to know what to do with us.
You landed at Murmansk?
Yes.
And what was the situation at Murmansk? I mean, what was happening when you disembarked?
Nothing as far as I could see, because there was a war somewhere which I never discovered. Because I literally one day got, you know, these little trolleys you have on railway lines, which you do a thing like that and the thing goes along. I went with somebody else on the line, which eventually goes down to Leningrad if you go far enough. Went miles and miles and miles through forest, and it was dense forest up there, and you could hear guns going off. They might have been 50 miles away. The sounds carried phenomenal distances. And we went, another chap went miles and miles and miles. We suddenly realised we sooner or later we shall get to Leningrad or somewhere. We better go back. And I never found the war. It was going on somewhere around there. And this is quite true. I mean, you could hear guns going off, but it might have been 50 miles away. And the whole thing was as vague as could be. But odd things happened. The best thing was this business of getting a soldier servant.
I'll come back to that. Well, who did you report to at Murmansk?
A man called Brenner Hassett, who may or may not be known. He's one of the intelligence world, or was then. And Brenner Hassett, and a chap who chose to call himself Sergeant Smith, that was no doubt born in the Urals or somewhere, and one or two others, ran a curious little outfit. I don't know what it did. All I was concerned was getting regular meals, which they did not have. And so we got regular meals, and then there was this little matter of my batman.
What did they tell you what you were meant to do?
No, never. It's quite fantastic. He was simply a little boy about the house. Brenner Hassett was doing something or other, and I don't know why I put it in that. I was treated to an execution one night, and I'll never do that again.
I'll come back to that as well.
Part of the act.
You didn't stay at Murmansk long. You went.
No, I went almost straight on by the next day in a train going due south to a place called Medvedjegora.
Called what, sorry?
Medvedjegora, which means Bear Hill.
And what was the situation there?
Well, it was a railway station, and I think the headquarters... Oh, no, the headquarters of the British troops were a place called Chem, which is halfway down from Murmansk to Medvedjegora. And these were just sort of intelligence outposts, I suppose. I really hadn't a clue as to what was going on, and... all I had to do was to get up every morning and control the train that came down from Murmansk to see that anybody who came down on it was a fit and proper person to be allowed off it. Occasionally you got odd things. On one day, a man dressed up to the nines in very Bond Street clothes with a lady equally well-dressed came down on this train and had been told, you better go back to Russia, to communist Russia, and off they went. And I don't know whether I put it in that. There was the train of people being sent down there, and I was put on charge of it for one night. And I've no doubt it was true. One of the passengers said, if you let me off this train, I've got a substantial account in East London. I'm quite sure it was true. I'll give you a cheque for £500 or whatever it was, and it will be met. And I don't regret to say, but I did not accede to that request. And the poor man was undoubtedly murdered very shortly afterwards, as the whole of the rest of the people in that train were. It was all sort of curious, nightmarish things happening. And certainly there was an aurora borealis on that night, too. But it was all, not say comic opera, because it wasn't comic opera. It was tragic comic stuff, if you like, with no particular object.
So who this? It's at Medvedchugora that Blennerhassett was at, was it?
He was the intelligence officer. What he was actually doing, I don't know.
And what were the other intelligence staff? Who was the intelligence staff?
There's Blennerhassett and a chap called Stoker, or Caulfield Stoker, in the Oxford Light Infantry, who had such a bad stammer that I could never converse with him. This is perfectly true. And a gentleman who called himself Sergeant Smith, who no doubt was born probably the other side of the Urals or somewhere like that, but there was a very competent local agent. I suppose it was simply a local agency. But Blennerhassett had a reputation of, and I quite believe it too, I have done a thing that I'd never have believed of anybody else, that he went across from the British lines to the German lines in France during the war, in daylight, to go and talk to Germans on the other side. And that, I think, is perfectly true. I've never seen it recorded anywhere.
What kind of a man was he? I mean, well, did you have much close contact with him?
Not very close. His mother was Lady Blennerhassett. He took me to lunch at the Savage Club, I think, later on. But one of these people you could never penetrate at all. Nice, but a nice man. And Blennerhassett, I think, is a good County Cork Irish family.
Now, this duty you were given of controlling the train, what exactly did you have to do then?
Oh, to see that the people had necessary papers if they looked doubtful or anything like that. And I suppose take them out and shot them if they weren't. But none of them. There are only about three people, as a rule, on the train. There's a little photograph of them somewhere.
And how would you check their papers? What were you looking for?
Well, this Sergeant Smith, whatever in reality was, he could read any local language and did.
What type of people would be on the train? What were they doing?
I think there was a certain amount of local traffic, but, I mean, you could number the people on the train on the fingers of one hand, I think, or two hands, anyway. And the occasional, I suppose that from one looking for, people who were trying to get away to the south, very unusually, like this man and his wife who were being sent down to the south. And there was a thing that reminded me of, you know, there was an aurora borealis or something here the other night. Well, one night there was that, and I happened to be on duty for half the night guarding the train that was taking all the unwanted people down to the, well, it wasn't actually a frontier, but wherever the frontier would have been if there was one, and being pushed over into communist Russia. And the whole trainload of people were there, and I remember to this day a chap leaning out of that carriage and saying, in perfect English, and I'm sure it was true, that he had a substantial bank account in East London, and if I would just let him off this train while the other chap's away, he would give me a cheque for £500 or something like that, and it would be met. I have no doubt that it was perfectly true, but even then I had scruples and did not accept it. But there were curious things like that. Everything was curious.
Now, why were they being sent back to the
Because they were allegedly Bolsheviks.
But this chap obviously wasn't.
I don't know why, but he was being kicked out from because Murmansk, of course, the Russians that were there were nominally white Russians.
Now, you said most of these people were later on killed. Who killed them? Would they be killed by the communist Russians, or were they killed by the white Russians, or were they killed by the
I know I can't produce any evidence on it, but there was a GSO-3 there who made a habit of taking individual Russians who he didn't like very well for a walk in the woods with a spade and come back with a spade. That was considered quite normal. I was treated, I think it's in one of those things there, to one of these affairs, which I didn't repeat. And
what happened there?
I don't know whether I put in that or not.
If you could tell us the story.
Well, simply this. Somebody said, somebody is going to be executed tonight. So to speak, would you like to come and see? And like an idiot, I said yes. Well, the people to be executed, I think there were two of them, were put in front. And then there were three Russian soldiers with rifles and fixed bayonets, and one or two other people in a row back, like that, including myself and another. We walked for miles and miles and miles into the forest, when suddenly the escort, if you like, who were behind the prisoners, let their rifles off. And the prisoners, of course, were nearly dead. They then very kindly offered me white Russians, all right. I mean, not white Russians or whatever they were. They were
Bolsheviks.
Bolsheviks. They had, you know, the Russian army, old Russian army cap badge is an oval thing that you've probably seen it. They very kindly offered me the cap badges of these people, and which I tactfully refused. But what really scared me was going back, because we'd gone about 5 or 6 miles into the forest, and the people who'd done the dirty work were all fairly ginned up, I think, and they might quite well have turned on us. And so I said to Caulfield Stoker, the other chap, you and I are going to march one behind the other, not sideways on. If they shoot one, they're going to shoot both. And I was very frightened. And
Why did you feel? Because they were meant to be on your side. These.
I know, but they were, what is the word, trigger happy then, by then, you see, then anything could have happened.
How did you feel about witnessing this sort of execution?
I'd never do it again. But that's the sort of stupid thing one did in those days.
Did you approve of this sort of shooting of people out of hand?
I'm trying to put myself back to that time. I mean, one obviously wouldn't have approved of it now. Probably at the time, people were either black or white, so to speak, politically, and if they were black, all right, shoot them. Because it was a rough world up there, and as it had been in other places. But
what about this GSO3, the staff officer?
Well, this chap, well, he...
Do you remember his name?
No, it might come back. No, I can't offhand. If I find out, I'll let you know. It might suddenly come back.
What kind of a man was he, then?
Quite an ordinary sort of a British officer. I mean, presumably very anti-Bolshevik and that sort of thing, but then most people were. I think it's probably in that thing. The thing I did like was I said, well, what about a Batman for me? Is it in that? I suppose it is.
Well, tell us that story then, yes. What happened then?
Oh, they said there aren't any Batman here. You can't have a Batman. But what you can do is you can go down to the prisoners of war camp and you can take a prisoner of war, and use him as your Batman. And I did just that. And Private Snooks of the Russian army became my Batman. I gave him a course of instruction on cleaning brass buttons and polishing my boots and this kind of thing. And he improved on it by pinching a British Marine's jacket. The Marines up there, they weren't very clever up there, but at any rate, they did not wear red jackets, they wore khaki jackets. And so this boy got this jacket with brass buttons, and I showed him how to polish brass buttons neatly. And so I had the honour of having a soldier servant from the Red Army for quite a long time.
How did you get on with him?
I cannot remember how it worked all right. I mean, whether it was sign language or what, because I could only speak German, and I couldn't speak Russian. But probably a few words were enough. And he fairly took to it. I mean, he dressed himself up and considered himself a good soldier of the British Army or British Marine.
Did you pay him at all?
Yes, in pairs of socks, that's a point. It's, of course, they're far and away the most useful things. Because, I mean, the British Army socks were an asset. Mr. Kuzmin.
What was your accommodation like during this period?
We that station, that little, you saw that picture there, I think we lived in that building, I think. And all I can remember, when we eventually left, You know that on most continental railways there are vans, they're called tepushkas there, and in Russia the vans had a little stove in the middle to keep, and people travelled in these in large numbers. So when we left, I remember saying, I want my camp bed put in the middle of this van, near the stove for choice, and I will go to sleep on it. There were about 40 other people in the van who did not have beds to sleep on, and they slept on the floor. I mean, they were local Russians or something, but I can't, that's all I can remember. I took my camp bed and set up bedroom in the middle of this van, and it had the stove, because the tepushkas all did, and we went off to somewhere in the White Sea, where there was...
I'll come back to when you left, but... Did you have a mess while you were there?
Oh, no, well, I organised that because there didn't appear to be any set times for meals. The mess considered only about four people, but it was that, and I got that going because I didn't like not having my midday meal or something of that sort. We did get that going. And then we, of course, very shamefacedly eventually withdrew, and we felt proper.
Why had you been invited to go there? I mean, you don't seem to have had any real...
Only the intelligence course at Harrow on the Hill.
And what were you meant to be doing?
Ask me. Help Benahasset was the intelligence officer up there, but I couldn't help him because I didn't speak Russian, nor did Caulfield Stoker, the other chap with me. But out of the half a dozen or ten chaps who went out, one or two of the others got sent somewhere else, and one or two of the others got murdered by some people called Red Finns. I might quite well have been sent there, but I wasn't sent there, wherever there was. We were nominee intelligence officers, but it was one of these things that nobody seemed to have thought out. Nobody had a clue as to what was going on or what we should do. You can't believe it. I mean, how...
Did they think that you were Russian-speaking or
counterintelligence? No, that's the idiotic part. I mean, it was known that we were not Russian-speaking, and quite obviously we should have been Russian-speaking. I mean, there must have been a few people about then who spoke Russian.
Had there been an actual mistake, do you think, or was it just...
I know, Kearney, the only thing it did do is it sent me back to King's College London University after that to begin to learn Russian. You can't believe it. I mean, it sounds so idiotic. The whole thing sounds idiotic. But, of course, it was interesting, and it was much better than soaping arms in the barracks at Dover.
Do you remember any other, before you came to leave, do you remember any other things that happened to you there? Any other stories that might give us an idea what was happening?
Well, nothing very much did happen. I mean, there must have been things which I've forgotten, mainly to do with handling suspects and things like that. But I can't remember any detail of that.
You wouldn't be involved in interrogating through an interpreter at all, would you?
No, I wasn't. I mean, one might well have been. That's quite true. I don't think I was.
And were you given any aerial photographs to interpret or anything like that?
No, I might well have been. That's quite true. That's one of the things one did at Harrow.
But you weren't. You didn't get any of that.
No.
How long were you there? You got there in about August.
Only about 2 months. We left in October, I think. We're from somewhere in the White Sea. It seemed a very long time at the time.
But you reasonably enjoyed it? I mean,
oh, everything was enjoyable, and anything was preferable to the sloping arms and barrack squares at Dover.
Did you understand the political situation and what was happening?
No, one believed that the British government is always right, that we are on the winning side, that. All Bolsheviks are bastards. All these white Russians are very nice people, such as they were there, and things like that. But it was all very vague. It was geographically so vague. These miles and miles of impenetrable forest.
From your personal experience, did you think that all Bolsheviks are bastards and all the white Russians were good? I mean,
yes, I think so. That then I certainly did. I presumably did. I mean. It was awful seeing this trainload of people going down, because I think they were all shot probably before they got over the frontier. I don't know whether that's fact or fiction.
And they were Bolsheviks? Who?
They were allegedly Bolsheviks. They've been carted down from Murmansk or somewhere up there delivered at Leningrad.
Didn't that give you an idea that perhaps not all the white forces were in?
No, I suppose one was stupefied and hardly capable of thinking properly in circumstances like that. I mean, it was this train load of people, one felt quite sure that they may have been pushed over the frontier, or they may all have been shot. I don't know. But it wouldn't, if somebody said they were, in fact, all shot, I would not disbelieve them.